challenge me if the liability is challenging too, there's no insurance coverage, all with one exception. I thought it was kind of interesting. And that is one union had their insurance company cover company medical services. My assumption would be probably because in that union they're bringing up somebody with authority, but you have the doctors and doctors and nature was covered. But there's only one. So patients all had paid out of pocket, which meant that the income the nature of the doctors got was not consistent with education experience. And then if you look at get price for any kind of college, any kind of medical school, you of course will want to go to foundation. Get foundation to provide you financial support. Well, foundation and institute of healthcare would of course have an MD as the head of their committee. And so when Winston's foundation asked for their financial support, you know, they literally in some cases left. No respect, no interest in supporting them. If you look at academics, okay, so again, there's only one academic college left in all of North America. The classes were taught by attendees and not paid. The latest textbook had been published in the year on the board. And so textbooks, a few of the wordings got messed for terribly out of date. There's no route for accreditation. There were no residencies for admissions. There was no third party funding. There was no trained faculty. And there was no pool of prepared students. If you look at research, there's basically no application of research in any kind of practice. And as a matter of fact, when I start talking about science and research to the name kind of doctors that I was being taught by, I found passion shifting towards research and towards science, because science with a capital S was the term used by the medical profession to discredit and eliminate all the other field arts by saying they're not scientific. Of course, very much. So what did we have? And what we had was, as Dr. Pastor said, was the truth about what we meant. So that's what we started with back in 1978. So we got together and decided to start this school. I wrote all the curriculum. I went out and found facilities, faculty, and all these kinds of things. We miraculously found 31 students to start. So we decided to do the school of people in 2000. We announced it to the public in July, and by September we somehow got it here. Now I was a little disappointed with the goals for two, but looking back, how was that able to do it with nothing? All we had was these 4 years I could develop. So we had no expectation other than I was a respected clinician. Bill Mitchell was a respected clinician. 31 students showed up, and there began quite a journey. And the journey was to basically fix everything. We and I had to create the school. We also had to recreate the profession, and we also had to change public perception of what was going on. So what did we do? So the first thing is I established the scientific foundation. My belief is that science is a tool can be used by anybody, not just by the profession. My belief also was that there was no reason to fear science doing research on natural medicine. Because think about it. If you're using a therapy for a patient, you want to know that it works. If it doesn't work, why would you use it? So you may have therapy. Could even be a therapy that you use for 100 years. But if you actually clinically test it, it doesn't work, why use it? It does not make our philosophy invalid. It does not make other therapies invalid. It simply says that particular therapy did do what we expected. So we need to find out what does work, what we need to have happen, and use that instead. So science makes this. So, number one was a science base. Number two was recruiting proper faculty. So what I did was I went out and recruited PhD to teach basic sciences. So while they had a disadvantage that PhDs don't attend clinical application of the information that they teach, it does provide a very strong foundation for clinical sciences, because that is what's critical to get something. One thing that people don't realize about Dr. Bastier was that he was a voracious reader and studier. He studied all the time. And so the Dr. Bastier always told us was, number one, he said, always check your major. Let them know you care. And number two, always study. He said, every night before you go to bed at night, you have to read at least one research study or learn another herbal remedy, done something, so you always get better. I can't emphasize that enough. And then I had the entity in case of therapeutic findings, because that's what addiction drugs would have, to be able to treat people with loss of interest. And finally, I was able to get a modern laboratory to teach basic sciences. So, and here starts some stories. And I think in many ways, that's your university is a blessing. Because you look at how many times you could fail, and did how many times you needed somebody's time before, and how they did. And if you look at what happened that time after we found it, 4 out of 800 all started at the same time. The other 3, I did see them, which had been Seattle before, which I graduated from, but they went to the so basically, it was a pretty good question.
What else in Canada?
I both started in Ontario, called the Ontario College of Transplant, and that school was started as a post-graduate program. Mainly chiropractors and general certification and naturopaths, and then to the now but up until this point, one of the reasons why so many Canadian companies said, well, geez, that's still, besides the dedication to the profession, their licensure in the office required that there be a dedication call. So when they got called, they lost the right to have. I can tell you a lot of stories about Dr. Boucher. Out of Vancouver, who was one of the most helpful here. And there's actually no names after Dr. Boucher in Vancouver. And Dr. Boucher was one of the old mountain men. And so we students would love every summer to go up to British Columbia to hike with Dr. Boucher and have him tell stories. And it was a lot of fun. Someday, over a cup of tea or a cup of glass of beer from Dr. Boucher. So, miracle number one. So, I wanted to start a school, I wanted to allow you to do it right. And in order to do it right, I knew I needed modern laboratories. I needed to be able to show that we're teaching, when we teach us good chemistry, they're going to have what, gene microbiology, microscopes, and gene microbes, things like this. So, I went searching and I found at Yale Community College that the dean of the school there was a subject of natural medicine. Why was he suffering from genetic pathogens? Well, it turns out he had a quirky old uncle in California who was a genetic doctor. They really liked him. So when we came along and said, hey, we want to research for genetic pathogens medicine, can we at least monitor space for you? He said, actually, I'd love to do it. Number two, a week before school wanted to start, this is what we do in orientation. And the third was to discuss literally all the time. Sell homes, sell practices, sell businesses, what case may be, to come. It turns out that a local medical school had found out that we were looking for a school. And they found out that we established this contract with Sales and Community College to use some of their faculty to plan the facility for classes. They complained to the state and said, you have community college, which now teaches which is proposing these classes above their. It's our district college, right? We're not supposed to be teaching graduate level programs, courses, in basic sciences. So, right before we're supposed to start, our program got shut down. Because we couldn't open the door because the doors were unlocked. So, this was, of course, a challenge. And so I asked what we could do about it. What's my friend? Who could give a first grant? That's what I think we could do. He said, well, let's talk to the president of the college. The president couldn't do anything. He said, well, let's talk to the chancellor. The whole community college system of Seattle area. We're going to take community college and the chancellor public. Okay, so here's where miracle number two comes along. So it turns out that this chancellor was in his late 50s. His wife was as well. And she, of course, was a grandmother. And make it his wife very difficult. So, his wife and talking to her girlfriend about her problems. So, you know, I'm going to make that doctor, and he fixed that for my problems. She said, you should go and see her as well. So her friend said, okay, well, she went to see the friend, and Chancellor saying, he disliked the statement. Just as the crisis happened, his wife no longer had all the symptoms. And so he says, well, maybe we should give these medicine a chance. And you know, I don't mind going up against the university. So he goes down there. And we ended up working on a deal where we couldn't be continued to keep our appointments at Chelsea College, although we had to change the financial arrangement and then lost our students along with tuition because we also managed to apply Delta Nursing number 2 for us. So we got both. Down to school, I managed to recruit a PhD in anatomy. Graduate after class in 1984, that was great. I think 82, those are a great experience. And we had our first graduation ceremony in the auditorium. Okay, so imagine this 1982. We have at this point 100 students in the school. We're just doing everything we can to just stay alive by student routines. And so imagine turn off one year drive, driving through the forest. This campus. I'm learning that it's all they've been closed several years before as a seminary, and now there's just these announcements. So we had graduation here, after graduation, I started my year and said, Sunday, Master, John Master of College, we had a message at that point. Sunday we'll be here. And everybody thought that was great. After the week, you guys can imagine here we have 100 students, very alive. Things are really, really grim. I had the vision of what we could do as an institution. And so I started at that point in my area of national. And a few years later, I bought a house over in Seattle on the, I guess we call it the eastern slope, like Washington, with a view of the campus. And I hold all my staff and faculty meetings, and I hold my home, and I remind everybody that someday. So anyway, one of the things we realized in 1982 was that now that we established a pretty good educational program, it's not perfect, I'm sure you can all talk about the efficiency of the educational program, you know, it all always hold to the decision, but it was the best that I had, it was the best that I had for the assessment. Stronger in that area, and so he, particularly for medicine, he had married for Dr. Christopher, who was a medical doctor. they put in place instead the vice chancellor of the University of Utah, a man by the name of Swartz. And he was this kind of old man who just took, just like, yeah. Because if you think about it, you have to hear a bunch of rededicated people, kind of young. Remember, I was 30 years old. One of the challenges they have is by talking about what vision, what I'm trying to create, they say, well, that sounds good. Now I'm going to talk to your dad. That's what it was like. So he actually liked his education. He didn't know anything about the medicine, but he could see our academics were good. And so he basically wrote a glory report for us and got a pre-accreditation status. It was for candidate accreditation from the North West Association of Schools and Colleges in 1983. Now, this was a big impact because, again, no school in natural medicine ever been accredited anywhere in the world but the United States. Sorry. So, we got our pre-accreditation status. Huge accomplishment for the institution. Well, they decided at that point that, oh, maybe we should reconsider our accreditation standards. So they appointed a committee to look into it, which would just have to be chaired by the retiring dean of Kingsbury, a local independent school. So they went through this objective process, and here later came up with new standards of eligibility, which just so happened excluded guess who? Us. Okay. We call it the bad group. So they established this new standard, which said that they would only accredit things that they would not accredit three standing schools. So out of the 106 college university accrediting, was only accepted three. One was a school which was a branch of a college, another university in another state. So they just simply switched their accreditation to another state. So no offer from them. The second, the other one was called pre-accreditation for psychology. Well, they've already talked about merging with the local college, so they merged with the local college. So put it in that. So we tried to negotiate with them, and we couldn't get anywhere. So this is where, once again, if I say Providence, so anyway, so they established accreditation standards, the objective. They then sent out the accreditation chief with, as it turns out, the very fact the end of it. He sent back a statement saying, no, these people no longer meet the standards. And so we had to go. We tried negotiating with them, we're not successful. We're going to appeal, but before we did the appeal with the enrollment system, we then started a public relations campaign. So what we started to realize as we were developing as a school was that we weren't simply an academic institution, we were actually a political movement. And so we actually got some consultants who come from the world of politics and actually got their assistance in developing political campaigns. So we started talking to our patients. So for example, one of our patients, talking about here, was a wonderful woman by the name of Liberty Ball. I'll tell you more about her. And Trudy Ball is one of the wealthiest women in Seattle. Her husband was a major businessman downtown Seattle. And so he started working on political connections. We had, basically, it turns out, unbeknownst to most people, we have friends in political places and in the downtown business community, including the governor of the state and Governor Gardner, who all had actually been out with many other doctors over the years, thought positive about this, started the campaign of letters to great agencies saying, on the one hand, you should have federal standards are very high, so you want to credit them. But on the other hand, you now pass these rules that seem to be only politically motivated and don't have any valid actual freedom and compare it to the public. Okay. And the final straw was a letter from the governor of the state of Washington chastising them for attacking well-respected institution. So, what we did, along with the political process, was decided to keep going. So we're no longer going to accredit single, freestanding single program. for research, and probably more importantly, could present herself to the public as being in front of the So that allows And I think we're at break time, so I need to let my voice recover. But before we break, any questions? Last year was we did have good timing. People wanted to look at alternatives. And also, remember, it's also in the 80s that we started seeing limitations of this. We started realizing that drugs weren't going to be different for everything. These people more receptive to other brain. Any more questions for Andre? Okay, so you can finish up.
Sign in for Dr. Daniels for myself. So, a little more about your history. 1984, we became the first Institute of Natural Medicine ever to become an NIH Center for Alternative Medicine Research. We're very happy to see that happen. We basically were funded to do research on that and our program. Got a lot of attention. And also in 1994, we had a very significant accomplishment, and that was the establishment of the Kingston Natural Medicine Center. Now, the significance of this is pretty clear, and we can kind of go through the process. So this all started clinics, the clinic that was funded by the government. So, no, to look what all of them have to do in practice was be practicing at the clinic, but that's a So the idea was could we establish a clinic that would be funded by government? Well, we thought that Washington would be completely different from this area because as you've been around for a while, we've come to the ability. So we went to the King County Council. The King County, people don't realize, it actually in terms of population, is the 12th largest county in the country. It actually has quite a large population. And it was at that point headed by 13 members, Democrats and Republicans, basically. So we went to them, and we went to the, decided to start this by talking to the chair of the council. Not by having a colon, who unfortunately sent the seats. Kent was a PhD in chemistry. So we went to his office, and I started talking about natural medicine, why it would be a good idea to have a natural medicine clinic. And he basically stopped me and spent the next 15 minutes talking about nutrition and how important nutrition was for people's health, and pulled textbooks off his bookshelf story about nutrition. So we knew we had an ally. So we decided to go before the council and suggest that we make one of their local community clinics to provide services to low-income populations. Let's make that into a natural medicine clinic. And we have to collaborate with natural medicine. So we went before this 13-member council, and we made this presentation to them. And we cheated a little bit, and that is that Kent knew what health care conditions. So this presentation was done by myself, Jeff Glenn, Jonathan Wright, and one of Jonathan Wright's patients. Now, how many of you know Jeff Glenn? You need to learn about Jeff Glenn. He is a biochemist. He created an organization called Institute of Functional Medicine, and a lot of what I learned about how to apply science to natural medicine came from Jeff. If you ever had a chance to listen to a lecture, he's an incredibly inspirational lecture. I really encourage you to learn about Anyway, so Jeff was a really good lecturer. So he's part of the presentation. Jonathan Wright, how many of you heard of Jonathan Wright? Not many. Wow. Jonathan Wright, practiced at Kent, Washington, was one of the first medical doctors. Harvard graduate, brilliant man, knows nutritional medicine, so John, of course myself. So three of us, we're good at what we do. And the fourth person to make the presentation was one of Jonathan's patients. Now at this point, Jonathan had one of our graduates working for him. So this patient came in to say, I want to tell you about my daughter. My daughter is 7 and has chronic urinary tract infections, her kidneys were damaged. She was scheduled for a kidney transplant operation. It was going to cost $250,000 and total health care costs of the lifetime, including an operation. And it was drugs. I went to Dr. Jonathan Wright and Dr. James Lampson, one of our class 82 graduates, and they cured her. No kidney problems, no need for a kidney transplant. Well, you know, you could have heard a pin drop afterwards. It wasn't a dry eye in place. It was pretty well done. So they decided to vote on a proposal to establish this King County Natural Medicine Clinic, and they voted everything nothing to support. So this really significant. So an enterprise report afterwards, when they interviewed the 13 council members, turns out that 9 of them had been going to their graduates and hadn't told each other about it. It's pretty significant. So we established the King County Natural Medicine Clinic. What was really great about it? So it's had a co-director, MD, and an ND, city degree, or actually gained a different degree, for co-directors of the clinic. When patients came in, they could say, I want to go the natural medicine route, or the conventional medicine route, or I need both together, and then they're there talking together. We also had acupuncture as part of the program. We had nutritionists available, massage therapists available, and chiropractors available. That clinic got 1,500 media stories. New York Times, Good Morning America, magazines, newspapers, radio shows, it got incredible public attention. And that also helped with that on the map. Because it said, wow, look at this. Now we have government approval of this idea of having integrated collaboration. One is our primary upstate medicine clinic, but now also do a day at 31 of the other clinics. Where they have those in to provide health services. So it's been a great success, and they kept it going. Even though government funding's not there anymore, the clinics have a so important part of their culture that they kept it going.
Have this condition, it would be great elevation.
started hearing on you.
Yes.
Because, of course, I took her blood pressure, blood pressure pretty elevated, so I get, I got the chance, came back, I come back, see me. I said, okay, got the blood results. She said, okay, tell me. Right there is where the specialists are appropriate. all the rest of the time is when we're the best. And that's why I want to stay in the prison. That's why I'm working for you. Okay. And we're going to go.
You commented that a lot of ways last year has come to fruition of what you your vision was, but not in the area of communication between the healing arts. What did you mean by that?
I think there should be all of a cross-fertilization of the arts. There should be an intentional, collaborative, mutual investigation process. Each committee can work on this all the time. And I think that every healthcare system has its advantages and strengths. One of the advantages of the healthcare system is we are well deserved to everybody. One of the disadvantages is that if you, sometimes if you're careful of trade,
has the student body here always been predominantly female?
First two classes were majority male after that.
First.
Typically running on that 5%. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, that's just going to be a problem.
A male-female difference. I play basketball 2 hours. like to look at the subject at red, three times my life, 75. To practice it, I'd like to state it's a challenge. And you run to challenge for two reasons. One is, if you mess up a person, that'll cause problems. The second is, if you cure somebody with too high focal, that'll cause you problems. So what we need to do is to practice what other rays are, develop a four qualitative grateful patients, and then go to the start of the process. You should also make sure that your license is in another state, because that'll show that they have proper credentials, recognized by other states, and after a while it starts to look foolish, very mindful. Yeah, so you have a good patient, you have work, you haven't hurt anybody, and you've got patients, you have friends, legislature, your license in another state, or you're not there, why shouldn't our state license you? And eventually you get license. That takes time. I think that's probably true. Do you know why it became a felony? Because the guy who wrote back to me, chemistry, and he's so frightened of medical profession that he made it turn into a felony. So I'm going to go.
Based on your feelings about clinical studies and the support that we're getting from NIH through NCAM and everything, if you could speak to NCAM's position on homeopathy and how you felt about it.
I don't know
the
official position.
It's just been bothering me because it's so frustrating. Because I've been looking at it and I've been trying to understand it because they're still funding studies on it, which is wonderful and really great. And I've read a bunch of studies individually on homeopathy that have come out and support it, but there's been a number of meta-analyses of the clinical studies that have come out in a negative light, and so I think based off that, NCAM has come out against it, and it's very upsetting. I was just wondering how you know.
Homeopathy is interesting in that it's not hard to find a theoretical foundation for it that is consistent with modern science. If you look at the studies, there have been 400 clinical studies now, something like that. And if you go through and do a careful analysis and cut throughout the lots of studies, you end up with about 100 studies that are criticized, and 100 studies, 3/4 of them show positive effects, about a quarter of them show negative. So, in terms of the research of homeopathy, there, the preponderance of research is still gray. There's some positive research. So I think there's something there, but I think we'll have to have some real main problems. One is what the real theoretical foundation, and two is how well would the revenues be made. Because of course, the revenues are not being made now, they're waiting for a lot of money. So you can't have, since we don't have the debt enough thing, change the debt money to pay, and only for that very good. And yet, I think pretty much people will help to tell you about that. One could say it's because that study will probably be hard enough to get a good look at it. That can be also, I think for many reasons, so I would like to see research being done looking at how the whole country would be made to then make sure we get the right remedies and then do the research. I know that homeopathic manufacturers aren't going to like what I have to say because the way the Honda made them is very time consuming, but maybe more expensive to produce. But you don't really know if you do it right or not. Why think that an industrialized process is the same as the by hand process that we have done? Okay? Okay, we have 10 minutes left. We'll talk about it. Challenges of having been president here for 22 years is that I quote cast a big shadow. I choose not to make the life of the current president, whoever that might be, anyway. I hate being I hate not being able to respond to my case. And don't apply that to saying raised in Institute of Public Affairs and Bass University. And I would like to say, I find that very frustrating as well. You would take a class in the third year called Healing Systems, and I basically give you the best approach to think about patients. And I'm chair of the board at Institute of Public Affairs, so I'm very aware of what they do. I think they do a lot of very, very good work. I really encourage you to make use of their services.
And I would like to also add that there are many of the attending faculty in the clinic who have gone through some of those trainings and education. So you could get it's you know, you're not getting it in the first year, but and it may not get like a direct collaboration, but a lot of what you will learn from other professors comes from that.
Oh, good to hear. You won't find anything surprising there. I think they've done a good job of systematizing and developing a model of how to apply in natural medicine. Oh, very good question. How do you feel about MDs being able to prescribe drugs? Okay, so what did Dr. Bensberg say about that? I was kind of looking back. What did Dr. Bensberg say about that? He said you should use whatever's present for your patient. And sometimes that's a drug, sometimes it's not. I have no problem with thinking about using drugs with two very strong provisions. Number one is use the drug where you know how it works. In fact, I do not do it properly. And number two, don't use it in place of 50 drugs of medicine. Now, one of the greatest fears that I had in Washington State when we got drugs was some doctors, particularly the weaker doctors, are being started to rely on the drugs as easy fix rather than doing what's real with the patient. And remember, drugs release up a lot more, a lot faster than the body heals up. So I have a concern about that. In result, yeah, there are some doctors that misuse the drugs, but not very common. But more importantly, as political work, to be able to say to a state legislature or a federal government agency, yeah, you know, I can prescribe drugs. It's part of my license, but I choose not to. So I look back at my own private practice, and I kind of kept track of this. I would say probably 5% of my patients are attempted to prescribe drugs, too. I refer them to the drug treatment. But 95% of that was one, but there's provision here. If you're a project in a research area where there aren't other medical doctors readily available for you, you're going to need to be able to use drugs. And just be real surprised. Somebody comes in with pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia, you have to use drugs. Somebody comes in with a massive infection, like I got once, like basketball, I cut up my arm, and the basketball floor didn't clean up adequately, I had a massive infection in my arm. Well, you know, antibiotics.
And yes, and just one more thing. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to say anything. And yet, going back to our idea of collaboration, one nice thing, as a naturopath, to be able to prescribe drugs, he said, hey, but I have this MD over here, why don't you go see them? You call them up, and they go, wow, you're calling me up. You don't have to do it all. We're going to create collaboration. So, I last year when you spoke about this, it illuminated me a little bit because you made me think about the fact that now that I can prescribe it and choose not to, what political power I have. Yet, I would like to throw out there that there are a number of practitioners, and I can name them that I wouldn't, who are missing for prescribing outside our alleged substances. And a lot of times because of fear. So again, as Dr. Persona said, please know, we talked about on Wednesday, about for Monday substitution, it's not in place of it. Please know what's going on before you prescribe.
Yeah, so let me get a clear example of that. You can set broken bone, right? You can first break your arm, you can set the arm. Do you want to? You set a broken arm like once every year. I think you can be very good at it. But essentially, you can prescribe it, but are you be very good at it? You're not doing it all the time. If you do it all the time, why not make it happen? So use your collaboration. I think Brad said it very well. Use your collaboration. Okay. If you're in a setting where you have to use this option, like you're in a city and you're the only doctor around, well, make sure you know how to use those things. Remember, a lot of reasons people come to see us is because of adverse drug reactions. Remember, 25% of visits to MDs. So if you use those drugs, you're going to get the same level of adverse drug
the only thing you do. You never just prescribe a medication and don't do the rest of it. It's a part of the hierarchy. It's part of the hierarchy. So if you're prescribing an antibiotic, you're not talking about anything else. You aren't a natural.
Exactly. So we come to the bacterial pneumonia, I'm going to use antibiotic. But I want to know why they get the bacterial pneumonia. What's wrong with your system? What's going on? I want to fix that. Be a particular challenge for personal health.